I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps show. As always, I'm your host, Larry Lease. And on today, on Murder Monday, we dive into the dark web killer. So you can find absolutely anything on the internet nowadays, from old video games dating back to your childhood, to that obscure song you heard once and never thought you'd find it again, to, of course, more nefarious things like weapons, drugs, and other illicit items. Honestly, on the internet, you can even find murder for hire. But the wild and scary thing about the internet, especially thanks to the help of unregulated currencies like Bitcoin, is that it can all remain pretty anonymous. Now, you never know who's soliciting these services. It's hard to find out who is buying them, and most of the time people have no idea that they are the target. So if you piss off the wrong person, all it takes is a few clicks of the mouse and a quick Bitcoin transaction to land a bullseye on your back. Excuse me. I will say I have a decent knowledge of cryptocurrency, but not an expert, but I'm going to sum it up really easily. Everyone has a wallet, and that wallet has an address. So if you do figure out who owns that address, you can then basically track it. You can track things from there. So it can be sent to another address, but then you track it from where the address originally came from, where that's going from there. Then when it's going from there, I worked with cryptocurrency a little bit. I'm still learning. There's a lot of things I might have wrong, so if someone wants to correct me, go ahead. But it is interesting that it is true. It's like, if you know, nobody knows whose address that is, then it, yeah, I mean, it can stay hidden. But that address can be tracked. Like, you have to put in some information. I mean, they'll figure it out. They know someone, right? Because that address is still linked to whoever sent that. So if they figure out whose address that is, eventually, game over. Anyways, just thought I'd let everybody know that. I guess, like it's very off topic, but I don't know everything about cryptocurrency. I mean, it's a lot to learn. It just doesn't even make sense to me how there's still a ton of it. But I guess we do kind of do the same thing with Bitcoin, or with, you know, money right now. You know, we just print more and more and more. And they keep just digging more Bitcoin. Excuse me. So anyways, all that to say, you could possibly hire someone to kill someone in your life and then pay them Bitcoin. It might not be able to be tracked 100%. And that is seemingly what happened to the victim in today's case, 43-year-old mother Emil Allwine. At least that is what everyone thought happened at first, but we're gonna obviously get into it. So the year is 2016. We're about a 30-minute drive southeast of Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's a suburban area known as Cottage Grove. It's where 43-year-old Stephen and Amy Allwine have called home for some time now. The couple actually married 20 years prior, back in 1996. They were college sweethearts who met and fell in love at a Christian university. To most people, as life went on, they seemed to live a pretty typical middle American lifestyle. Quiet, content, happy. Stephen was a freelance IT expert. Amy owned her own dog training business, so there were always tons of furry friends in this couple's orbit. Both were deeply involved in their local church, the United Church of God, so much so that Stephen actually became a church elder, someone who gave sermons and offered guidance to other members of the congregation, like counseling couples in their marriage in times of need. So the Allwines were seen as good people. They had even adopted a little boy back around 2006 that they named Joseph, who now, back in 2016, was 9 years old. And Joseph was everything to Amy. Those who knew Amy said she lit up like a Christmas tree anytime there was a mention of her adopted son Joseph. She would go to the ends of the earth for Joseph and the family that she had built. But in November of 2016, the Allwines faced the absolute unthinkable. November 13th, 2016. That morning, Stephen was working from home in his basement office like he often did. And around noon, he went upstairs for his lunch break and he ate lunch with Joseph and Amy. But that's when Amy told Stephen that she wasn't feeling well, so she was going to head upstairs to lay down. Maybe just take a nap, rest for a bit, and Stephen said, "Okay, I'll wrap up my workday so I can watch Joseph." Now around, Now around 1 p.m., Amy's dad comes over to help finish a project that they were working on at their home. But around 2 p.m., Amy says to her dad, "Hey, can you take Joseph over to your house for a bit so Stephen can take me to the doctor?" So of course her dad says, "Of course, we'll be by to pick up Joseph no later than 5:30 p.m. for dinner." Now when 5:30 rolls around, Stephen is the one who swings by Amy's dad's house, so he's alone to get their son Joseph. And when her dad is like, "Hey, how did the doctor visit go? Like, what did they say?" Stephen's like, "Oh, Amy changed her mind about going and just stayed in bed." So after a little bit of conversation, Stephen and Joseph get back in the car and go home at around 6:50 p.m. And they go inside their house, and when they get to the master bedroom to check on Amy, they find her on the floor. She's in a pool of her own blood and has a gun beside her. She's been shot on the right side of her head. So Stephen, the husband, calls 911 and he tells the dispatcher, "Hey, I'm pretty sure that my wife has died by suicide."
911, what's the address of the emergency?
I think my wife shot herself. There's blood all over.
Shot herself with a gun?
It looks like it.
Dead.
Is it just you and your son home right now?
Yes.
Okay. Stephen, are you able to just step out of the home with your son so that my officers can see you when they pull up?
Yeah.
This call is pretty disturbing and also memorable to the operator for a few reasons. One, because Joseph is heard in the background asking his father why his mother would do that to herself. It's horrible, and because he's only 9 years old. And then Joseph, the son, asks Stephen another odd question on the 911 call. I mean, I guess, you know, when I heard this happen, I would assume that if the husband saw the body first, that he would kind of like keep his kid away from it, not just let his kid to hover around. But I mean, everybody parents differently, you know, not everybody's the same. But of course, you also have to, you know, you can't rule out that, you know, in the heat of the moment, you're not thinking clearly, obviously. I wonder if it was more important to get on the phone with 911 to possibly save her than to take measures to get the kid out of the room. No, you just don't want a 9-year-old to see that, because, I mean, it's horrible. But the other odd thing that you can hear in the back of the 911 call is Joseph asks his dad, "Are you going to remarry now?" Kids say weird things as a 9-year-old, especially in moments of distress, but it's actually Steven's reaction to the question that sticks with the operator. Like, as she's on the phone, she's like, "What the?" Because Stephen, the dad who's calling to report that his wife has died by suicide, and his 9-year-old son just stumbled upon it, laughs at his 9-year-old son's question and just says, "I don't know, buddy." So meanwhile, Sergeant Gwen Martin hears the dispatch call come over her radio, and when she hears the address and that a female has died by suicide, she has a sinking feeling in her stomach, because she knows that address all too well. She knows who lives there. In fact, Sergeant Gwen knows Amy pretty well. She taught her in an 8-week course recently, one that teaches civilians about emergency services and law enforcement. This was a topic that Amy had become interested in, so Sergeant Martin had literally just seen the victim 2 weeks earlier. And to her, Gwen, Amy seemed like someone who was planning for the future. She was definitely someone who would do anything for her kid. So this sergeant thought Amy showed zero signs of someone maybe battling with suicidal thoughts. Now obviously, we never know. I mean, she just was stunned, I think, as most of us would be. But she also knows in this line of work, you can never be certain what sort of demons someone deals with behind closed doors. So unfortunately, Sergeant Martin is also one of the first people to arrive at the crime scene. And some of what she sees that day kind of validates these thoughts of her that I just don't think it is suicide. Now, Now, when she first sees Amy, she's lying face up on the floor and her pants are partially unzipped. Then she notices a smell. There's something cooking in the family's kitchen. Amy had a pumpkin roasting in the oven. The sergeant is like, who puts dinner in the oven and then decides to go upstairs and die by suicide? Which, I mean, it is weird, but I don't think there's like a correct way or a guidebook to kill yourself correctly. But I get the suspicions. I mean, it makes sense, especially with how weird the call was. You're like, okay, something's off. It's also the job to question everything like they're investigating, and I appreciate that for, you know, 100%. So once forensics gets involved, there's even more that doesn't add up to this story. The gunshot wound to Amy's head is on the right side, but the gun is resting on her left side, on her left arm. There's also no blood spatter or gunpowder on her hands, which, if Amy was the one to pull the trigger, she would have both. And then cops realize there's a few drops of blood in other parts of the primary bedroom, which makes them wonder, did someone move her body here and clean up the actual crime scene? Now sure enough, when they do a luminol test, they discover that the room had been recently cleaned, but was covered in bloodstains and footprints, ones that led from the primary bedroom to the mudroom and bathroom on the main floor, and then to Joseph's bedroom. How do you make it so that doesn't happen when obviously, you know, just a lot of bleach. Excuse me. So I think it's safe to say that detectives are like, well, you can't die by suicide and then clean up your own crime scene afterwards, right? So by the following day, they already have an autopsy report on Amy's body, and they find Amy had died somewhere around 3:15 p.m. that day. I just love how we can figure all this out like that quickly. Excuse me. But they also find evidence that is inconsistent with suicide, mainly because Amy had scopolamine in her system, and that is a drug that is used to treat nausea. And not only was it about 20 times the regular dose, Amy did not have a prescription for that drug. So how did this large of an amount of this drug get into her body? Now typically in cases like this, the first person that you're going to suspect is the husband. But this becomes a little more complicated for detectives. For starters, Stephen kept saying that he wasn't home during Amy's time of death that day. And while I'm not sure where he claimed to be, there were other witnesses who said they saw an anonymous vehicle speed away from the house shortly after her time of death. So the husband is saying, I wasn't home at that time, 3:15 p.m. And the neighbors were saying, well, we saw an unknown vehicle leaving around that time. Plus, Stephen seems cooperative. He's willing to go down to the station for questioning. Not to mention, there's something else that the police have to consider once they get to know Amy and her past. Because Amy had actually been approached by the FBI the past spring. So Amy was already on law enforcement's radar. The FBI was doing an investigation of their own, completely unrelated, and found Amy's name on a dark web hit list. How scary would that be to have the FBI show up at your door and be like, hey, just so you know, somebody put a hit out on you. I mean, that's just wild. I mean, now you understand why maybe the husband isn't the first suspect. So back around May 31st, 2016, this is about 5 months before Amy's death, she was called into the Cottage Grove Police Department to speak with them and the FBI, and they asked her the one question that no one ever wants to hear. Amy, do you know of anyone who might want you dead? Do you think she told her husband about this or went without him knowing? I'll just make that a rhetorical question for now. So it turns out that the FBI had just learned about a murder for hire site on the dark web, the Bessa Mafia, and so they had received a giant cache of data, including email exchanges between Bessa Mafia and their clients. So basically, the FBI uncovered this dark web hit list, a place that you could hire. So they have this website, they have the clients, and then the everyday people who are on the hit list. Now, it's important to say that the clients didn't use their real names, obviously, but the people on the hit list, it was their real names, and Amy Allwine was one of them. They also had the username of the person who had ordered the hit on Amy, and it was someone named Dog Day God. Now, something I've learned from this story was you cannot just access the dark web through Google. You actually have to have some special software to access sites like the Besa Mafia. What's interesting is this technology was actually created by the military to hide their secrets on backdoor websites. So it's sort of ironic that the military created this loophole on the internet, and now it is used for so much illegal activity. But the Besa Mafia is a whole other level of dark web criminals. The site claims to be operated by an Albanian mafia, but it seems like it's run by this evil overlord, a guy who goes by Euro. And basically, him and his website will recruit anyone who's up for the challenge, meaning they literally post invites for prospective killers to essentially send in audition tapes to become hitmen for this dark website. A quote from one of his videos on the site says, quote, "If one searches online for," and I quote, "shot dead on street, one will find plenty of news about people being shot dead in the street by unknown people that shoot and then leave. These are our hitmen. We will be waiting for you to come place your orders and then get rid of your problem." And literally on this website, there is a menu of item options from $4,000 for a basic killing to $10,000 for a shoot and run. And then something as high as $50,000 for a high-profile sniper murder. They say it depends mostly on how challenging the job will be to pull off. Like if the target has a bodyguard, they're going to charge more. And by the way, on this website, you cannot pay with a Visa. The only currency they accept is Bitcoin. Because of the anonymity, meaning it isn't tied back to anyone's name or IP address. By the time the FBI discovered the Besa Mafia, they already had a list of 282 hits on this website that had been ordered across 60 different countries. I mean, there are like 17-year-old girls in Canada looking to kill ex-boyfriends on this website. Literally, anyone can log on, and with a few clicks of the keyboard, and boom, revenge at your fingertips. But Amy, this woman is seemingly harmless. She's been happily and faithfully married for the last 20 years. She's a working mom who makes YouTube videos dancing with her church elder husband. Who would want this woman dead, and for what? Well, it turns out the FBI got all these answers through the leak. There were 60 pages worth of correspondence between Dog Day God, this is the username that took out the hit, and the Besa Mafia. So this had all started back in February 2016, actually Valentine's Day to be exact. That's when Dog Day God first reached out to the Besa Mafia saying, quote, "I'm looking to hire you for a hit, but what is the recommended way to convert cash to Bitcoin anonymously?" After a few emails were sent back and forth negotiating a price, Dog Day God agreed to send over $112,000 in Bitcoin for the hit job. And they finally revealed their target was a woman named Amy Allwine. The words they used were, "I need this B dead, so please help me." The message continued saying that Amy had stolen clients from this person's dog training business, but it suggested the betrayal went far beyond that, because the email also implied that Amy not only was stealing clients, but had been sleeping with the business competitor's husband. They even offer up the perfect opportunity for the hit to happen. They told the Besa Mafia that Amy had an upcoming business trip to Moline, Illinois. They even give them the hotel that Amy is going to be staying at, a description of her car, and the route that she would likely take. And on top of that, they offer up ways they would like Amy to be killed. They want it to look like an accident, and they don't want the son or the husband to be harmed in any way. Now, clearly nothing happens to Amy during this trip, as you know, but this exchange continues for the next 4 months as Dog Day God works with the Besa Mafia to help coordinate other options for this hit. They give them daily updates on Amy's movements, when she was at the grocery store, the gas station, heading out of town. I mean, Amy has a full-time stalker who's now trying to take out a hit on her. So when the police sit down with her in May 2016, they uncover all of this. They pull Amy in and they're like, "Lady, you're in trouble." And she is, of course, shocked about the whole thing. She tells the FBI, "I've never had an affair." She offers the FBI a couple of names of people it could be. But she's like, "I don't know anyone in my life who fits this description." Steve and her husband even asked the police, is there any way they might have gotten the wrong Amy? But apparently, Dog Day God had even sent Besa Mafia pictures of Amy. So there's no confusion, they got the right Amy. Which is why the FBI says to the All Minds, we think you should take these threats seriously. And they have to, because they don't stop once the FBI gets involved. In July of 2016, 5 months before her death, Amy receives two anonymous emails, presumably from Dog Day God. They say, quote, Amy, I still blame you for my life falling apart. Here's what is going to happen. I will come after everything else that you love. Here's how you can save your family. Commit suicide. So why not do it now and save them? So Amy does the right thing. She shares these emails with the FBI, who begin interviewing suspects, including some of Amy and Steven's work colleagues. They don't find anything, mainly because the email from Dog Day God was untraceable. So they tell the Allwines the best thing for them to do is to get a home security system, install a few cameras, buy a gun. But Amy is living in absolute fear at this point. I mean, she's afraid to even be in her own home. She's worried someone is going to come in during the night and kill her. So now you can see why all this is especially scary when in November of 2016, Amy Allwine dies by suicide. So naturally, her friends and family are furious with the FBI and the local police. They're like, you were warned that she was going to be killed and you did nothing. She was just alone in her house. Even though they claimed they had increased security patrols in the area to keep a closer eye on her, she still was killed. And so to many, the hired hitman possibility makes a lot of sense. Not only did people report cars fleeing from the neighborhood that day, a mastermind of the Besa Mafia, the guy named as Yora, actually releases a video on the site after her death and says, killed? Yeah. He masks his voice and his face and he says, hey, this website should be taken seriously because we are responsible for Amy's death. We took that hit out. So far, many of the names that the family had given the police just didn't check out, which is why they also haven't totally ruled out the possibility that maybe Steven, the husband, was somehow involved. Especially because of how he acted on the day his wife died. Not only did he have that odd conversation with his son on the 911 call, where he laughed and they talked about Ramar, well, he also seemed a bit too calm when he came in for questioning. Plus, as police dig further into Amy's case over the following days, they find one really incriminating detail. Remember how Dog Day God had to pay for the hit using Bitcoin? Well, in order to do that, the user had to send a 34-character wallet code to make that transaction. And that same wallet code was later found on Steven's computer. So they learn all this and they're like, okay, so the husband, Steven, was Dog Day God. So the question at this point now is, why would this church elder want his wife dead? Here's a little detail about Steven and Amy's church. Not only did they not believe in divorce, if a church elder was ever found committing adultery, they would be asked to leave the congregation. He was cheating on his wife. Well, this was something that was definitely problematic for Steven, who had been seeking out affairs over the internet for the last 2 years. He was actually doing this on the site Ashley Madison, to be exact, which, ironically, he learned about while offering marriage counseling to one of the couples at his church. But for anyone who doesn't know, Ashley Madison is a popular website that rose to fame in the mid-2000s that encourages extramarital affairs. So you can get on, create an account, and it's literally to cheat. Like everyone on there is stepping out of their marriage. Excuse me. So actually, there was a huge leak from Ashley Madison's database in 2015, which is not good because this is not the website that you want to leak because it threatened millions of users, ruined a lot of lives and a lot of marriages. So whether or not Steven was involved in the leak, I actually have no idea, but it's very possible it scared him into making some pretty rash decisions. Because this just happened a year earlier. Bunch of people who are using this site get leaked, and he's using this site now. I'm not sure if Amy knew about that about the at least three different affairs that he was having, but I do know that Stephen realized that there was no way to actually be with any of these new women. His church didn't allow him to get divorced. So maybe Stephen had to come up with a different plan. Maybe he needed to have his wife killed so he could go on and be a free man. Which is when Stephen possibly took to the dark web and stumbled upon the Base of Mafia. Maybe he thought it was an easy way for him to walk away with his hands clean. So maybe he forked over the Bitcoin, around 122,000 to be exact, and then waited and waited and waited and talked to this website. There's also the possibility that he was met with every single excuse. They would just keep making a new plan. Stephen would send more money. Obviously, we know nothing was coming of it. Which is why, probably in July of 2016, Dog Day of God emailed Amy themselves. Remember, and told her that they would kill her whole family if she didn't kill herself. But when Amy went right to the FBI with those emails, maybe Stephen realized his plan wasn't working the way he expected it to. And it seemed like the Base of Mafia, this website on the dark web that he had paid, they were never going to pull through. And Stephen wasn't wrong. You know why? They took his money. The entire website was a scam. So this website on the dark web was a con to make money off of pathetically desperate people who were trying to get something out of their lives for good. I hate to say it, but I'm kind of glad that they were scamming everybody because, one, they weren't killing people, and two, they were scamming at people that wanted to kill other people. Maybe Amy's death actually promoted this website, because the website made a video in 2016 after she died saying, "Look," but it wasn't even them. They said, "Look, someone took a hit on her and we did it. Look, she's dead." So it was all a marketing ploy. Why wouldn't they take the credit? It legitimized their fake business. Now, I guess it never occurred to Stephen that $112,000 for a hit was suspiciously cheap. Like, that does feel very cheap, but it was low enough for them to rope in the cash. And if they were paying with Bitcoin, there was no way he was ever going to see that money again. Now, once Stephen finally figured out that he'd be scammed, he was already so committed to the idea of having Amy killed that he chose a new path. He's like, "I'm just going to do it myself." But again, he actually used the dark web as a tool. So this is where I'm getting into what Stephen actually did. This time when he realizes, hey, this website is not going to kill my wife. He goes online and begins searching for drugs. And he found a site called Dream Market. For one reason or another, he decided to purchase a large amount of scopolamine. That's the anti-nausea medicine that was found in her system, which in large doses can make people loopy, disoriented, even compliant. And remember, Amy had 20 times the normal amount in her system when the coroner did her autopsy. So on the afternoon of November 2016, or in the days leading up to it, Stephen had begun slipping Amy that large dose in her food or drink, which was why Amy felt so sick that afternoon. Now once the dad took Joseph and the son was out of the house, it seems Stephen took advantage of the state that he'd put Amy in, grabbed the gun the family had bought to protect themselves from this hit, Stephen then used that gun to kill Amy and stage her death as a suicide. Right now, Stephen denies all this. He insists, no, I didn't do this. It has to be whoever took the hit out on her. There was no way that he would ever do anything to his wife and leave his son motherless. However, as we know, there was a lot of evidence to suggest this was another lie. So there's a lot of things I find ironic in this case, but maybe one of the biggest things is that Stephen was an IT guy. He should have known how to cover his tracks, at least when it comes to computers, right? And yet his computer was some of the best evidence against him. For example, Stephen had a browser set up on his computer that could let him access the dark web as well as on his phone, so he was definitely accessing it. Dog Day God first contacted the Base of Mafia on Valentine's Day. Shortly after sending that message, Stephen's computer showed him Googling how to use Bitcoin. And remember, the first message was, "How do I use Bitcoin?" The following day, he was looking up Amy's itinerary for her business trip to Moline, Illinois, and figuring out what drive she would take to get there. Now remember, that message was this exact information. On March 6th, Stephen downloads a picture to the family's desktop of Amy on their recent trip to Hawaii. Picture that is sent days later, there's an email from the base of Mafia to Dog Day God explaining how to purchase Bitcoin and that he should then report that money stolen to his bank to cover his trail. Now immediately after, Stephen calls the Cottage Grove police and says he's been a victim of a scam. So while police couldn't exactly trace Dog Day God's IP address, it's detail after detail like this that basically proves this was happening from Stephen's computer. So unless someone is repeatedly breaking into his house, accessing his computer, and keeping up this charade for months leading up to Amy's death, it has to be him. Which is why he's finally arrested and charged with second-degree murder in January of 2017. However, once he got in front of a grand jury, these charges were escalated to first-degree murder because everything is screaming premeditation. So there's an 8-day trial and Stephen's like, hey, I didn't do any of this. I mean, there were plenty of female friends in her life who had access to their phone and computer. He's like, someone had to have been coming in and using my computer. He also was like, the police did such a bad job, there was also this hit out for her. But as we know, after years of doing this show, the simplest explanation is often the most likely. So after the 8-day trial, the jury deliberated for 6 hours to conclude that Stephen Allwine was guilty of first-degree murder. At his sentencing, the judge gave Stephen an earful before handing down his sentence, saying, quote, you're an incredible actor, a hypocrite, and a cold, calculated killer. There, he is sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Now, as for the Base of Mafia and their scam website, nobody knows who they are. The FBI has since traced the website to a location in Romania, and as of 2022, at least 5 members of the fraudulent organization have been arrested and are facing charges like murder, organized crime, money laundering. The website and others like it are still operating in corners of the dark web today, and that is just the reality we live in, which is so wild. I mean, but that's the case of Amy Allwine. It's definitely a sad story. Amy was just a good mom because they couldn't get divorced. It's just so ironic, so sad. It's ironic to me too that you're having 3 affairs, so you don't want to be with your wife anymore because you want to be a member of this church. So your solution is to murder. One of like the most important commandments, do you know what I mean? I think the reasoning for the murders is because you want to stay at a church that just doesn't look there. It just like doesn't even, you know what I'm trying to say? It's just hypocritical. It's crazy how much it happens. All right, you guys, that was our episode for this week. Hope you have had an amazing Halloween, and we'll see you next Monday for another Murder Monday episode. And if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, you can find us on all major podcast platforms, including Good Pods, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts from. And as always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.